that is to provide them in that case. So then you have to have a sheriff to go and serve a notice on the firearm owner, but that is for the cost of the firearm owner. So that is also important, that we must understand that. Now, in a certain sense, Chairperson, I don't think it's going to be so many people that's going to be necessary to get the sheriff to go and to visit the people as far as notices are concerned. Because there are quite a lot of people that will react after the registered mail to remind them that they have to deal with the firearm in the three ways. So I just want to explain that. And then we say, where a police official in the presence of a holder of a license issued in terms of this chapter determines that the license was terminated, that police official must require the affected holder of the license to within 60 days comply with one of the actions set out in the paragraph and must in writing report to the registrar the details of the holder of the license and the date on which the notice was so given. So, Chairperson, I know that, and that is where there is also an obligation from the CF or the Central Firearms Registry to ensure that we have proper control on firearms. Because they're supposed to know exactly who has a firearm and what is the address of that holder. If you change address, then according to the Act, you have to inform the CFR that you have changed address. And if there is proper control on firearms, then this should not be an obstacle to reach people and to say, but your firearm license has expired and we expecting certain actions from your side. Further, Chairperson, by the substitution for section 5 of the following subsection, if within 60 days the firearm is not disposed of as contemplated in subsection 1A04, the firearm is not surrendered or no application for renewal as contemplated in subsection 1 and has been submitted to the registrar, the affected firearm must be forfeited to the state and the former holder of the license must surrender it immediately at such place and in such manner as a registrar may determine. So that is the obligation on the firearm owner. After the person has been informed to say, listen, your firearm license had expired and now you have an opportunity. Yes, you can surrender it, you can surrender it or you can go through a dealer or you can apply for the renewal. But if a person doesn't want to do anything or use any of those three positions, Chairperson, then in that case there is no other way than it must be forfeited to the state. Chairperson, as far as Section 107 is concerned, it's more an administrative issue because Section 107 it says any person who carries with him or her a firearm must, at the request of a police official or any person authorized by the registrar, produce the license. And now we insert proof of application for the renewal of a license, permit or authorization, as the case may be. And subsection 4 is also that in these circumstances, if you then can prove an application for the renewal of a license, then in fact, to put it simple, you cannot be actually arrested. The transitional provisions in Clause 5, Chairperson, I'm not going to read in everything. In fact, it comes down to the situation that at present, and I've asked an official question to the Minister in Parliament, how many firearms licenses had expired and where the owners did not apply for the renewal of their firearms. The figure the minister gave in his answer was 385,000. But I know there are different figures. Some people mentioned, well, that was I think around about May or June when I've asked the question. I know in the meantime some people mention it's even 400,000, 420,000 firearms that is at stake now where the firearms licenses had expired. And this clause 5, Chairperson, then actually provides that for those people at the moment whose firearms licenses had expired, that they now also have the opportunity to apply for the renewal of the firearm, or the other options, of course, is to surrender the firearm or to dispose of it through a dealer. And that is the whole essence of Clause 5, to ensure that those, let's make it then 400,000 firearms unlicensed at this moment, and that is actually on hold because of another court case of GOSA, Gun Owners of South Africa, where we're actually in a sort of a situation where the firearms are now there, and the final, I don't know when the final court case is going to be on that matter, but the whole idea of Clause 5 then is to say, let's solve that problem and say that we're given an opportunity even for those people after this amendment bill and when it comes into effect, that they also have the same opportunities. Chair, that is in essence what this amendment bill contains. So if there are questions, I will take the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Groenewald. We will proceed to the department first, Department of Police, Civilian Secretariat, to give us their input in terms of Rule 2864E of the 9th edition of the rules.
Morning, Chair, and honourable members again. I just want to state that it is incorrect for Honourable Groenewald to say that nothing has happened since the firearms summit that was held here in Parliament regarding the drafting of the amendment of this firearms control bill from the department side. From the summit that was held, the then Minister of Police, Minister Nhleko, formed a task team to review, because as you recall, that there was a bill that was published in 2015, and there were substantial comments that were received, and that was the result why there was a firearms summit, and then there was a task team that was formed immediately after that. And the task team has made significant progress in the reviewing the bill, that there is currently a bill that is in front of the Minister of Police, that has to be taken to the cabinet processes. Regarding this bill, Chair, I think our view is that there is a constitutional court judgment that is pronounced on Section 24 and 28 of the Firearms Control Act, that there is nothing wrong with those sections, they are constitutional, and that the gun owner knows that he must either apply for a renewal of a license in time or face disposal of a firearm if he doesn't do that. And also, if he does not do that, he'll be guilty of an offense. He knows what is expected of him or her, that before the expiry of the license, it is provided in the Act that he must fulfill certain expectations. This bill, Chair, I think it creates an administrative burden on the CFR. I'll just point out on two clauses. I think the first clause, I think it's in Clause 1, I think in the insertion of 3A, to the department, it seems as if this license is going to be continuing all the time, because I mean, even after the license is expired, the bill proposes that an administrative fine must be paid upon submission of a relevant application for renewal of a license of a firearm or surrendering of that firearm, as the case may be. So it seems as if, I mean, people will just simply, even though they fail to renew their license in time, they will simply afterwards just simply pay a fine and make an application for renewal. And as honourable member has said that that there are administrative problems at CFR, and this will add to those administrative burdens at CFR, that people who have failed to renew their licenses in time will just simply have to make an application afterwards and pay a fine. And also, in clause two, the issue of that now the CFR must actually write letters, registered letters to the various firearm owners, reminding them that their license is expired, that they must surrender their firearms, is also an administrative burden on CFR. You can imagine now, currently now, the honourable member said there's more than 400,000 people who have failed to renew their licenses. Now it will mean that the CFR must actually write the registered letters to more than 400,000 people to asking them to please come and surrender their firearms. Really, as I said earlier on, that the constitutional court saw no legal obstacle to handing the firearms over to the police after the termination of their license, and that the fear of the gun owners that they may be liable for prosecution of licensed firearm is really, really overstated. Also, I mean, I'm aware that the committee will deal with the issue of desirability at a later stage. We will submit that actually this bill is not desirable, as currently that the executive currently has a bill that's in the pipeline that will be tabled very soon to cabinet, and by the committee processing this bill, it will be like a tandem process, taking away the work that the executive has been doing on this bill since 2014. Thanks, sir.
Anything from your side?
No. Chair, Mr. Ntwana, I think covered everything that I was had to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your input. Then we will go to Mr. Kamfer from the Hunters Association for his input. You're welcome, Mr. Kamfer.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I deliberately do not want to talk about the content of the bill, but rather create the context within which I think one could look at the bill. Indeed, the Constitutional Court decided in favour of the police in June 2018. You will remember that SA Hunters got a decision in our favour in the High Court in 2016, and the Constitutional Court then ruled that sections 24 and 28 are indeed constitutional. However, one of the things that I think one should take note of is that the ruling made by the Constitutional Court, the order given was merely cases dismissed. So rather than solve the problem with the Constitutional Court decision, the case was dismissed. Sections 24 and 28 were deemed or seen to be constitutional, but it does not solve the problem that exists. Following that decision, the police started collecting firearms of which the licenses lapsed in various ways and in different ways, dealt with by police station level. No guidance and direction from the management of police in this context. We also know that the minister then applied for an amnesty. Then Goza brought the application and were granted an interdict that prevents the police to collect firearms of which the license has lapsed. The police were instructed that they had to stop collecting firearms of which licenses lapsed, and where individuals that already surrendered firearms wanted to have them back, the police had to give those firearms back to those individuals. The amnesty request was then either cancelled or withdrawn. The police applied for leave to appeal the interdict. However, since then, no progress was made in either the appeal or the main application. We do not have a date for that case to be heard yet. We have not had an application served to appeal the interdict yet. So it's stalemate. We're still in exactly the same position. There's no envisaged solution to the problem. So what is the problem to be addressed? And I will provide you with some information. First of all, on firearms of which the license has lapsed. Depending on who you talk to in the police service, the numbers vary between 420,000 and 470,000. These were figures that were provided in June this year, just after the Constitutional Court case. By now, it's most likely more, and I'm prepared to say I guarantee you that by now it is more. It includes about 30,000 firearms that are in estates where the original license owners have passed away and the estates are not finalized yet. We know that approximately 80% of those numbers are handguns, not hunting rifles or shotguns. I would also argue that these figures are not reliable for the following reasons. The SAPS 530s, it's a form that's got to be completed and captured by the police, are indeed not captured in time. This is the form that transfers the firearm from either the manufacturer or the importer to a dealer. I get a permit to import firearms or to manufacture firearms, and when those firearms are transferred to a dealer to be sold, I've got to complete the SAPS 530, submit it to the police. Those have got to be captured to then transfer the firearm from my stock as an importer to the stock of the dealer. Similarly, the SAPS 534s are not captured in time. Now, 534s are the forms that are completed once I, as an individual license holder, sell my firearm back to a dealer. So it transfers the license from my name to the dealer. The backlog in capturing this data runs anything between 6 and 12 months. So what happens is the importer imports a firearm with a permit, sells it to a dealer, creates the SAPS 530, submits it to the police, but it does not capture it. In the meantime, the firearm lies with a dealer. I go and I buy the firearm, I apply for a license, my license is issued, and only thereafter this 530 is captured by the police. What the system then does is it cancels the license in my name and it transfers the firearm to the stock of the dealer. So I sit with a firearm with a license in my hand, but the police system shows the firearm is in dealer stock, it's not mine. And hence, when I'm stopped in a roadblock, while I have a license for the firearm, the system shows that the firearm is owned by the dealer and I'm in illegal possession of the firearm. So you have a significant number of these firearms included in that 420,000 to 470,000 where I actually hold a legal license, but the system just captured the data later and then renders my license not valid because the police system shows the firearm as the possession of a dealer. The problem to be addressed is the following. First of all, the license holders of lapsed licenses, and let us for the moment assume there's about 450,000 of them, they cannot be prosecuted, because prosecution is prohibited by the Gorza Interdict at the moment, as well as the interpretation of the Concord decision. And I would also like to add to that a lack of capacity in the police and the prosecuting authority. I cannot imagine that the police has got the capacity to go prosecute 450,000 people because of licenses that have lapsed. The ability is just not there. We do not have adequate manpower in the police and in the courts to add a burden of another 400,000 to 450,000 cases to the existing caseload. On the firearms themselves, they cannot be collected by the police because of both the Gorza interdict as well as the interpretation of the Concord decision. One of the interesting things the judge said in making his ruling was that he cannot imagine that the police would prosecute somebody merely for the fact that the firearm license has lapsed. And that was interpreted to a large extent as that the police is not allowed to do so. So despite the court decision in June, we've not seen a single prosecution yet of any person of whom the license has lapsed until we got the interdict granted by the North Gauteng High Court that prevents that being done. But the end result of that is there's no change to the situation and there's no solution. These licenses started lapsing as long back as 2011. The first licenses lapsed in 2011, and since then, the lapsed licenses started collecting and growing. What would firearm owners prefer to do in circumstances that we have at the moment? I believe some of them would want to surrender. I believe there are a number of people that are just fed up with the situation as is, that would say, I just don't want to be bothered by this anymore. Rather take the firearm and do with it whatever you like. So some will surrender. I do not think it would be that many. Some firearm owners would prefer to sell those firearms because they believe it's got some value. However, I believe there are relatively few of these firearms that are that valuable. We know that the majority of those licenses are that lapsed are handguns, and most likely handguns with relatively low value. People may think dealers will buy them, but I guarantee you, I cannot see the firearms trade suddenly taking 400,000 second-hand handguns. There's no market for these, they won't sell. The dealers will buy firearms that are valuable and that they can sell. So when there are valuable firearms, yes, that will go back into the trade. But most definitely not the bulk of that 80% of relatively cheap handguns that form the bulk of the lapsed licenses. The majority of owners would most likely want to legalize the ownership of their firearms and would want to relicense those firearms. What happens in South Africa, the country in which we live today? If legislation is seen to be unfair and unreasonable, we see public disobedience and even to the extent that the law cannot be enforced. We see the way in which people drive in this country, contravening the act every single day and very often in a particular day. We see people not paying for the electricity they use. Most probably the best example I can quote to you is people refusing to pay e-toll to the extent that the system cannot contain itself any longer. The existing act is not implemented and managed well. I think we have seen that over time in a significant way. If those licenses started lapsing in 2011 and the CFR managed the implementation of the Act well, they should either have started having those firearms surrendered in 2011 already or started prosecuting people from 2011 onwards. That has never happened yet. I submit to you there is no hope for the system to work well. And if the police and the CFR could not make it work well in 12 years' time yet, they most likely never will do so. What does this amendment bill provide? An opportunity to solve the problems that I identified to you, to get rid of the 420,000 licenses that already lapsed, by either surrendering, disposing, or relicensing those firearms. And yes, pay the fine due, because you forgot to renew your license, therefore pay the fine, pay the penalty for that. It would also place an obligation on the CFR to manage the process well, which they've not done yet. However, I believe you should understand that if this bill is legislated and promulgated, it will heavily impact on the workload of the CFR. On that score, I most definitely agree with the Civil Secretariat. There will be more work for the CFR because they would have to process the result of the 420,000 to 470,000 licenses that already lapsed, whether it's a surrender, whether it's a sale or getting rid of the firearm, or whether it's a relicensing. They would in any case have to do the work and would have to process that. Chairman, thank you very much. That's my submission. I deliberately don't go to the content of the Act, but rather the environment in which this Act would operate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kamfer, again for your participation and also input. We appreciate it very much. Honourable members, we will now go to questions for clarification and input. The first one from my side, then I'll go to Honourable Ramadlakane. Just a question to the Civilian Secretariat, and I mean, I don't want to go into the merits of the bill or the desirability, but the role of Parliament. Now, for instance, like the Critical Infrastructure Bill, there was a private members bill by Honourable Bailey in 2015, and there was a submission by the Department Committee, hold your horses, there is a bill coming. We waited 3 years. In 2018, that bill was only finalized. In terms of the Firearms Amendment Bill that's currently underway, we had the Firearms Summit in 2015. It is four national commissioners later and three ministers later. And the story we hear is it's around the corner. Even if it must go through cabinet, it will only be before the new committee in 2020. So the question is, what is the responsibility of the legislature? Without looking at the merits, but if we must respond to what is perceived to be a dilemma in that environment, should Parliament wait forever? I just want to get your view on that. Honourable Ramadlakane.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thanks to the doctor for the presentation, and of course subsequent others that have added. I just want to ask, maybe I've got two questions, Doctor. The first one, I start from behind where you ended. The section that you call transitional section, you in a simple term, you simply saying let there be a amnesty, or in another way put differently, let's agree to this bill retrospectively. Am I hearing you gravitating to those terms in your submission? I am asking that question because it's a formulation and a half for that transitional period that you have presented. I just want to hear your view on that. On the second question is this. You started talking to Constitutional Court judgment, particularly on the 24 and 28. And basically, and you make ended that comment by saying it was left to the legislature to either decide whether there's been a, and this is my word, you didn't say this, whether there was in fact lacuna around that particular aspect, what happened in the event that happens. So is it, am I correct, you're saying that therefore that that provision as to what you do, there was no barring by the Constitutional Court, is what you're saying? Those are the two questions that I want to hear from you. Then I just want to ask the second one is to the Secretariat. I think the one I wanted to ask you already asked, I'll jump that. I just want to understand the presentation of the Civilian Secretariat. Is that your view in your response to this, that the fact that the Constitutional Court made that ruling in respect to 24 and 28, it meant that nothing should be done after? In fact, if there has been a lacuna, obviously the Constitutional Court can't be asked to judge on something that is not before it, or any court for that matter. So is it your view that the fact of that ruling that said no one has a constitutional right for this, it's a right that you apply for, it meant therefore that legislature can't do anything with that? Is that your view or understanding of the judgment? I'm asking that question because I did hear your presentation. It sounded to me as taking refuge behind the Constitutional Court judgment and stretching it to an extent that we don't have to do anything about what may be perceived as lacuna. Is that your view, that nothing can be done with respect to that? I'm asking that question because I didn't hear you speak about the response. Maybe you didn't have time to study this as well, like I didn't have the time. But I didn't hear you argue based on whether it is a good to make a law that have this option. But I did hear you say that the defense of the CFR in terms of the burden, that because there is it's going to create a burden, and I'm not going into the merit chair, but I'm just talking to point, because there will be invariably the administrative burden for the notices or the right, and therefore there is no desirability. I hear that argument going there because I don't think we were already on the desirability. We were still at the level of getting explanation. So there you were rushing to that to get to that point. That point, with respect, does not answer the question of what you do with lacuna. You do mention that there is a bill before the executive. Perhaps you know whether this lacuna that we are talking about here is addressed or whether it's not addressed. So you shied away from, let me put it straight, you shied away from getting into whether the content of options will make a bad law, but you're saying only it will be an administrative burden that is be given to the CFR. What is going to, is it a problem for the CFR to do what they are required to do in terms of the act that is being promulgated? Because I hear that argument supposed arguing that leave the thing as they are, because if you change them, they will create work for this. I mean, we can't condone the fact that CFR is not doing what it's supposed to do, and that has been the cry of this committee year after year. So, and we can't therefore make an argument that seems to say we condone that action by not acting in a particular way. Can you just explain that for me so that I really am with you on your understanding? The last presenter was very stayed away from the issue, and I understand why, but still made the argument though about the how to deal with the Laguna issue. And you end up by saying, even though there has been this the judgment and there was an interdict, and there is thing are standing still. That's what you're saying, you're almost concluding by saying. And therefore you're saying, in that case, you still shy away from what must be done. So, what must be done? Now, you are the practitioner in the field. You don't want to enter the boxing ring, I accept that, but you are here. You know that, you know what is happening, you've got figures that you have mentioned. Is it correct? No, maybe let me say what must be done. Let me not ask any other further question than that. That's really my three-legged questions that I've asked. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yes, I'll first deal with this and then I'll come back to Honourable Mslungu, Honourable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Two questions for Honourable Groenewald. My first one, during the period of renewal, should the owners be allowed to use their firearms as if it's normal, everything is normal? My second one, what will push a gun owner to renew in time? In your view, what can push a gun owner to renew their licenses on time instead of prolonging the renewal period? My next one to Mr. Kempfer. Whilst there is the surrender, disposal, the licensing, what must happen to this deadly machine, the firearm? Must it be used normally? What must happen to it? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Molobatsi. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentations. To Honourable Groenewald, the amendments to Section 106 and 107 of the FCA as proposed in Clause 3 and 4 should be clarified. Will you please explain why the proof of an application for renewal of license should be deemed sufficient in the event of an inspection of request of a police official or authorized person when Section 24.24 of 4 of the FCA already states that the license remains valid until the application is decided when lodged within the period provided? Is this provision not sufficient when an inspection is done? Has the situation been a documented problem in the past? My second question, Clause 2.1 1A extends the period of notification from the registrar that the license has been cancelled from 30 days to 60 days. Will you please explain the rationale behind the extension? My last question. Clause 1.3b provides that the minister may prescribe an administrative fine for late renewal. Renewal outside the 6 months period, surrender or destruction of the firearm. This should serve as a deterrent for late applications. Will you please indicate what he will deem an appropriate administrative fine in the aforementioned instances? Thank you.
Honorable Mula, Honorable Marke.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe I might have one question only. I'm not a legal person, but when going through the amendment bill, with my little knowledge, it seems to be trying to sort out a backlog that is already there. But as I check, after that backlog has been sorted out, then there will be nothing wrong with the original bill. Meaning that my understanding would be that if there is a moratorium of some sort or an amnesty of some sort that establishes something like an ad hoc system of dealing with the backlog, then the whole situation might be sorted out. Because if that is sorted out, then this amendment bill wouldn't be relevant, because nobody would have any reason why they mustn't go according to the time frames given in the bill itself. It only applies, according to me, it only applies now because there's a serious problem in the backlogs. So if it's possible for the minister or any other person to come up with a moratorium that all of these things that are needed in this amendment are applicable, and some sort of a committee or an ad hoc structure to sort out all of this mess that is there, whether from firearm registry or whatever. And when they finish that, if it's possible, the legal people will have to explain if that is possible. Then I don't think the bill would be desirable. But I agree. I don't disagree with whatever is in here. But I think the best thing would be to sort out that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Marke. Honorable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start off by saying South Africa is the second worst in the world in terms of deaths by guns or firearms, if that's the term we should use, with about 21 people dying through firearms every day in South Africa. So that's how bad it is. So really, I wouldn't compare it with renewal of car licenses. It's a very, very sensitive matter if you really look at it. But my first question is, are we not just pushing the goalpost here? Because all we're doing is we're wanting to extend it perhaps for another 90 days. And what makes us believe 470,000 people are not complying, going to comply if you just extend it by another 3 months or so? Clearly, it's not going to happen. These are people that are irresponsible. They know they have a responsibility to renew their licenses, and they must do that. We cannot talk about, Chair, renewal and sending 470,000 people renewals when guns or firearms is in the public domain through the media every single day. In fact, I think it's so bad that you can get it every hour now. That's how bad it is. So why should people be reminded? You don't remind them anymore with driver's licenses and IDs that are expiring. So why should you remind them about such an important thing as a firearm? So I'm not convinced that extending it for a couple of months is going to really solve the problem. I think they need to be more responsible. But I want to add one other point. It does not mean that if there are challenges in the firearm registry, that now in order to deal with the fact that the registry's got a problem, we must now go and extend it. So what happens if the 180 days is not going to be good enough, then we're going to go to 360 days. So what it simply means is that the firearm registry experiencing difficulties must get the act together and SAPS must work on it and solve the problem. Because at the end of the day, we want a solution to the problem, not running away from the problem. Now, Chair, the other problem that I have is the estimation is about 470,000 people that have got illegal guns. In fact, if we break it down, they are violating the firearms control. And I'm not sure why a court of law will want to stop the police from prosecuting, because they are in violation. In terms of the agreement, they must renew or they must return. And they don't seem to be doing that, and I think we need to actually look at that. What I would feel is that what even with the Gun Owners Association is to rather come together and work closer with the department, with SAPS, and see how we can find a solution to the problem in terms of the difficulties that they are actually experiencing. Now, Jay, for me, if these 470,000 people understand the seriousness of what is going on in not ensuring that they have renewed their licenses, then surely they should not be entitled to have these licenses renewed. What we should be doing is asking them to actually return them so that they could be destroyed. And I don't think that should be open for discussion. Now, I'm not sure what the appeal is going to take and how long it's going to actually take. But that does not mean while there's a process of appeal in place that gun owners can continue keeping that 470,000 firearms with them and not correcting the situation. I think they need to do something about actually correcting that. Now, the other thing that I wanted to touch on was the issue of the interdict that is in place. I want to say the easiest thing to do today in South African law, whether you have grounds or you don't have grounds, is to go to court and bring an application. And that stalls everything. The question we need to ask ourselves, is it right or is it wrong? If it is wrong, we need to understand that and we need to get our people to comply. Running to court and putting an interdict to stop processes, even though there's legislation to the effect, is not a solution to the problem. We must understand that guns in South Africa, firearm, in fact, I'd be one of them to lobby for a gun-free South Africa. It might lose me 470,000 votes, so be it, but I have to worry about 55 other million people in South Africa whose lives are at risk on a daily basis. Chair, I think I will stop there for now. Oh, yes, Chair, one more thing, sorry. One very, very important point. And renewals of licenses has a specific purpose. And that is why the Act provided for that renewals over that period, to be able to establish where people were competent, whether people still had possession of their firearms. Now, if you continue pushing the goalpost away, can you imagine you don't know whether this 470,000 people still have their firearms, how many of them have lost them, you don't even know whether. In fact, I would suggest that we put more stringent conditions on firearm ownership in South Africa so people that have them and possess them are really have the capacity, the capability, and qualify to have them. I'll stop there, Chair.
Thank you. Members, maybe just to indicate, remember, we're not going to discuss the desirability today. It's only high-level questions for clarification regarding the bill that's before us. We will give ample opportunity for that. Honourable Mshlongu?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't have a question, Chairperson, but I'm not also trying to go against your directive. But I think, Chairperson, you know, I'm one person. Whilst one will always dream of a gun-free South Africa, which is just a pipe dream at the moment. Complete pipe dream. I'll never allow myself that my wife can be raped by criminals helplessly in front of me because I am disarmed, allowing criminals in the country to ruin lives of innocent law-abiding people because we are just dreaming of something which is impossible. Completely impossible. Here in the Western Cape, here in Khayelitsha, all these areas of Philippi, as this committee, we are inundated with problems of illegal firearms, maiming lives, and all that stuff. Law, you know, Chairperson, I must be very honest. I don't have a problem with the suggested amendment bill, a private member's bill raised by Honorable Khunebal, to make the law user-friendly with the people instead of seeking to punish people who are law-abiding citizens of the country. Because now just calling for a junta that, no, we want free country, South Africa, no, it's good. It's a good thing, but it's just a dream. Porous borders, all these things. We have got a depleted defense force here which cannot even safeguard our own borders here. And you want us now to go and surrender ourselves to criminals? No, I personally cannot do that thing. I cannot do that thing. I think it's good that when we create, when we build as lawmakers, when we actually bring about law, we are here to make, we are not a court of law. We are lawmakers. The laws must actually then be informed by the culture of a country that we seek, or society that we seek to build. What kind of a country we want? The evolution of that culture must then culminate to a law. Not just something which is just a straitjacket, which doesn't even fit the conditions we find ourselves in. Now, I think, Chairperson, here I understand that the logic will be that there is a bill that is with the executive. As the committee member myself, I don't know from that time before Christ even was born, that bill was there. No processing of it into an act up until this private member's bill. This private member's bill, to me, my Chairperson, I think quite a number of its clauses can actually help that bill which is there in the shelves, because with all these ministers who are changed like underwears, new one after the other, after the other, and also the chain of command from the side of police. This thing creates a mess. I don't know what makes this bill not to be processed, now overtaken even by the critical infrastructure, which is now will soon become an act of parliament. We don't know. We will be told forever as parliament that no, the bill is there with the executive, but at what stage is it? We don't know. So I suggest, Chairperson, that we better make use of this to actually then begin to tailor-make it into that particular bill in order to ensure that we fortify it, to make it user-friendly, so that people of South Africa are not actually then seeing their own government going for a junta, seeking to disarm them for no reason, Those who break the law, yes. Those who abuse the firearms that are at their disposal, the law must deal with them. But you can't come to me and just simply say, Philip, just go and surrender your weapon and expose my family to these ruthless criminals. Who will defend me? Police will come when already my family has been wiped off by criminals. I cannot allow that thing. Honestly speaking, I think we need to be factual here, not be theoretical. The situation out there is very, very volatile. Criminals here in South Africa have taken over. Have taken over. Now, I think we need to be factual, not be theoretical. Not try to be politically correct under the abnormal situation that we find ourselves in. Now, with those few words, Chairperson, I just wanted just to alert us to that particular reality so that we all stand for, I personally stand for a gun-free society. But even as you can see, even in South Africa, our own ministers, even ministers whom I consider them as of very low threat, you know, like ministers of children and women and all that, they are all escorted by high-speed cars with sirens and all that, heavily armed officers, because they know. Now then you will, for me to be safe in South Africa, I need to become a minister. Then as a law-abiding citizen, I must just be, my children, my wife must just be raped by criminals and my, you know, we need to be factual. I think the laws that we make and we enact as parliament must be guided by reality on the ground. The reality on the ground states that we need to use everything to combat these criminals in order to ensure that as society, not that I want guns just to become, to be planted like chips to every Tom, Dick and Harry, but the regulatory framework must be realistic, not be subject to abuse. It will not be correct. I will disagree strongly with the civilian secretariat that, no, this will add a burden to CFR. It is the duty of CFR to ensure that they know each and every householder who has got a weapon, and is that weapon kept safely, and also is it used also for lawful purposes and all that, so that it fits into the system. Now, we cannot actually bring about, Chairperson, a bill or a law without the enforcers being ready to execute the enforcement part of it. If we come up with such excuses, we better put in abeyance that part of a bill up until the organs of state are aligned to the reality. No excuse. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable members, just to indicate, we said until 10:30, so I'm going to give an opportunity to Honourable Mbele and Honourable Kola Barnard, and then at the next meeting we will give an opportunity to Honourable Groenewald to respond and the other parties, unfortunately, due to the time limitation. But I mean, then we've got, you will have enough time. Honourable Mbele?
I might have missed something. Why are we hustling through this meeting and ending at 11? Is there something on I don't know about?
No, as I've indicated last week, we will only meet until 10:30 because there's another meeting that's going to take place, so that's the reason for the scheduling. But tomorrow morning, we're starting at 8:30. 8:30 with the SAPs in the same venue. With regard,
is this the ministerial axing? Is this the ministerial axing, maybe, that's happening at 10:30? Because we're all very keen to hear about that one.
No. Honourable Bailey?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Honourable Groenewald and Mr. I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name already. Mr. Kakamfa, thank you for the presentations. I mean, I think it's worth re-emphasizing the roots principled issue underlying all of this that Honourable Groenewald made, which is that it's important to have clarity about the binary between issues of competency to own a firearm, so the substantive merits around do you have no violent criminal history? Do you have the technical proficiency? And then simply matters of administrative or procedural compliance and treating those accordingly. But the one high-level question I do have for the Honourable Member on this amendment bill is that it seems to my mind that the bill isn't introducing anything fundamentally new to the firearms control regime. It's either amending certain timeframes for certain processes, and it seems that at least a handful of the provisions in the bill are already contained in the current Firearms Control Acts, in the sense of, for example, there's the amendment to explicitly mention proof of application as being part of the valid documentation for the purposes of an inspection. But the current Section 24, Subsection 4 of the FCA does say that as long as the application has been lodged, the license remains valid until finalization. There was another aspect. Oh yes, where in giving provision to apply after expiry, it says that the license holder would have to show good cause. But it is currently the case that Section 28 around termination is that when the registrar has sent the notice of termination of the license, the holder can submit representations as to why it shouldn't be cancelled, thus showing good cause for having missed the deadline. So I'm just trying to grasp what's the unique or novel dimension that we're trying to address with this particular bill, because I agree with the premise, I agree with the framework. I'm just trying to understand if there's anything I've missed, perhaps, so far. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just initially a couple to this team and Honourable Groenewald. Why allow for additional opportunities to renew? Does that rather contradict the referencing to the whole driver's license situation? If you miss the deadline, you must pay a fine. So if you're going for a fine, why then ask for additional opportunities? Because one could then simply pay the fine. I'm just wondering if they aren't contradictory. And what sort of fines are you proposing for a late application? How would those be determined? You've presented this despite the fact that the Civilian Secretariat for Police has indicated that the drafting of the Departmental Firearms Control Amendment Bill has been finalized. And I'm sure you've seen and read the leaked draft, wherein it removes self-defense as a reason for having a firearm. And I have it on very good authority that this was a move by the previous minister before the last removed minister. He's now an MP, Honourable Nhleko. Now, that will presumably at some stage in the new parliament come before this committee. So are you actually hoping that we could hustle this through before we rise in February, March? Do you see that as a possibility? I presume you do, so I'd like you to tell me how that could possibly happen. Maybe we should work through Christmas. Is there, and I'm not sure you're all the lawyers, a legal requirement in terms of these registered letters? I'm looking at corporate South Africa, who send out hundreds of thousands of SMSs reminding people of appointments, renewals, all sorts of things. I'll never forget the boxes and boxes of firearm licenses we found on oversight to the police in Pretoria. There they were, just lying there. Many of them expired. Never told the applicants they actually had them. So would that not be a solution to the catastrophe that is the Central Firearm Registry? Is it possible for an amendment such as this one, and this is for the legal brains here, to be made retrospective? Now, applying to those whose licenses were legal 1 minute and then declared expired the next minute, Obviously, for those of us who've actually followed the whole saga of the white and the green licenses, declared legal for life and then finally overturned, some declared illegal, the white ones. It's been a long saga, and of course it still sits in court. This committee has zero influence over that. These are legal firearm owners who have suddenly found themselves on the wrong side of the law. And you're looking for a solution. I don't see the civilian secretariat looking for a solution. I don't see the SAPs looking for a solution. So at least you've come up with something. That's the proposal here today. So rather than kind of looking down their nose at you as the civilian secretariat just did, I appreciate that coming because it's solution-driven. Now, to the civilian secretariat, those of us on this committee who've done oversight to the Central Firearm Registry building know exactly and intimately what an utter catastrophe it is. Thousands of files, thousands, hundreds of thousands of files stacked to the ceiling along corridors with rats running through them. When they're asked by the Auditor General to find a file, they just laugh and throw their hands in the air. The people, there are women there who have to have private fumigators in every week because the bird lice come down through the windows and up their legs. It's disgusting, okay? And it's chaos. So it hasn't improved in a decade. I don't know how long it's been, forever. It looks like it's been there since Oliver Twist. So you say it would be hard to send out 400,000 letters to firearm owners. But it's exactly what every big business in this country does. It's not hard. It's a computer program. And they just, they can't get up and get ahead of their own backlog, let alone bring in the expertise to run computer systems that would turn it into a 21st century entity, which it is not. It's an 18th century entity. I mean, it is just terrible. They got themselves into this mess. The SAPs got us into this mess, and just have never got on top of the situation, and all it's focusing on now is forbidding the law-abiding civilians from legalizing their status. That's all this is about. So I told you over and over and over when that first bill, which is now an act, was drafted, that the SAPs would not be able to deal with the administration. Now we're sitting here saying, oh, but it's an administrative burden on the SAPs. Well, hello, that's exactly what I told you was going to happen. And now we sit here with exactly the problem and you're crying because that's exactly the problem that I predicted. So perhaps on occasion you should listen to the honorable members when they say things and take it into consideration when you're doing these drafts. And we wouldn't be sitting with the problem we're sitting with now. Also, I've obviously read the leaked draft of the amendment bill, and I really do suggest that before it goes any further, you go and remove the personal opinions of people who are now no longer ministers. What we need in front of this committee are researched facts, proven research facts. Not opinions, and certainly I'd like to know if this mysteriously overseas-funded entity, this gun-free South Africa, gave input, because it sounds like a direct quote from them. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Unfortunately, Mr. Groenewald, you will give him proper opportunity for responses. Also, Mr. Comfort, if you're not able to come, written responses. You're welcome. Now I'll give you an opportunity. So what we will do, we will determine a date, and it might be on a Friday. We'll determine a date in the next 2 weeks for Mr. Groenewald to come back to the committee to respond in detail to the input of the members and also to the Civilian Secretariat and the Department of Police and Mr. Comfort if he's available. Otherwise, by written input will also be suffice, and then we will deal with the desirability. Mr. Groenewald, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Now, we will come back, but I think what is important, Chairperson, because I think the Honourable Marke as well as Ramatlakane actually referred to it. Yes, there are other ways to deal with the problem we are actually confronted. For instance, if you have an amnesty. The problem is an amnesty is a once-off. What happens after that amnesty? Then you are back with the situation where people did not apply in time. Therefore, that is the whole idea with this amendment bill, to address the situation on the long term, not only for a specific situation, but thank you for the opportunity, Chair, and then I will come back and I will respond in detail to each and every member. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Groenewald, for submitting your private member's bill, and also thank you for the members for the input and questions, and also for the Civilian Secretariat and Department of Police, and Mr. Kampfer, we appreciate it very much. We will then come back to the committee with regard to a new date where we will deal with the responses and also then go to the issue of desirability. Thank you very much. This meeting is closed. We will reconvene tomorrow at 8:30, same venue, with the South African Police Services. Thank you.